Welcome back to the Highway to Hoover podcast, a production of SEC Extra at d1baseball.com. I'm your host, Joe Healy, joined as always by my co-host, Mark Etheridge. First, before we get into a absolutely jam-packed weekend of SEC baseball action, the first weekend of SEC games around the conference, I have to let you know that Highway to Hoover is brought to you by Brock's Gap Brewing Company in Hoover, Alabama. Visit brocksgapbrewing.com for more information. Quick little side note on that. I've noticed I was browsing what beers they have on tap right now. Not that they're available to me, but just was kind of curious. And cool artwork. They it looks like they have like original art for all of their different products that they have on draft and that they sell there. And it's really kind of neat artwork. So that's one thing you can check out at brocksgapbrewing.com, but also an event schedule, a food truck schedule, all kinds of stuff there for you to check out. A reminder that we are doing a live podcast on Monday, May 22nd. That will be myself and Mark, of course. Kendall Rogers will be joining us, perhaps another special guest or two. So nothing to point you to as far as tickets just yet. But just mark your calendars, keep that in mind if that might be something that you would like to do the night before the SEC tournament. Okay, Mark. Wow, what a weekend. First weekend of SEC play really lived up to the advanced billing. We had some marquee series that were a lot of fun. We had some major upset. We had a major upset, at least on paper. Of course, it's early enough in the season that who really knows if it's an upset or not. Only time will tell. Right. But a lot happening. I don't know about you, but it felt good to kind of be back in the saddle in terms of SEC games and an SEC weekend that frankly felt like it lasted forever, just because we had the two Thursday series, and then we wrapped it up with, you know, Mizzou and Tennessee playing a doubleheader on Sunday. So plenty there to chew on. We're going to have a ton to talk about today. Let's jump in first with Vanderbilt handling Ole Miss. You know, this was a series that I have to admit I didn't see a ton of, just because I was at my own Thursday starting series, you know, Florida and Alabama. I was down in Gainesville. That started on Thursday, and then we had a doubleheader Friday, and I was traveling back home on Saturday. So this Vanderbilt Ole Miss series, I was following along, but I didn't get to see a lot of it live. But, you know, Vanderbilt sweeping Ole Miss is impressive. And not only did they sweep it, but they answered questions that we had about them and really kind of exceeded expectations. I don't know how much of it you saw in real time, Mark, but I can't imagine a more impressive outing for a team.
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing that we all wondered is, you know, Vanderbilt really challenged themselves in non-conference. And, you know, they lost five games. And people were kind of looking at that overall record. And, you know, a lot of times, and I get caught up doing it too, we look so much at that loss column that we forget about how it's comprised, right? Where did those wins and losses, how did they originate? And with Vanderbilt, their offense had not been strong. It had been, you know, everyone else in the SEC were almost everyone. Texas A&M kind of was up and down, but everyone else had really hit at a high level and Vanderbilt had not. And we all wondered, well, they have played a tougher competition, but what's going to happen when they get to SEC play? And everyone else is seeing the type of pitchers that maybe Vandy had seen earlier, and it kind of levels a little bit, normalizes. And that's what we saw. And I think Vanderbilt answered this in an affirmative. That offense is better than we thought. Their pitching was just as great against, you know, a really good Ole Miss hitting team as it was against the other teams that they played. And that was the surprising part for me, not that Vanderbilt was competitive and not that they won the series, but just how dominant they were and how they just took over that series from Ole Miss. And those games weren't close, right? I mean, there were some sweeps this week that had some close games, close calls, and this was not one of them. It was just one of those woodshed deals. And that, if you're Ole Miss, you know, you've got to be really concerned. Not only that the pitching, you kind of knew you were going to have to figure things out with Elliott out, but the offense was really shut down. And I did, that was for me, the biggest takeaway is Vanderbilt handled them, right? And they pitched to that lineup that we all felt, you know, what was going to get theirs regardless of who they faced.
there were a couple of things I thought coming into the weekend that, as I wrote in the weekend preview, that as you and I talked about, Vanderbilt to this point, leading into the weekend, was they had to win games close and low scoring. That was kind of the way they were winning games. And it just felt like the first issue was good luck keeping the Ole Miss offense in a low scoring game. That felt basically impossible, no matter how good your pitching is. And, mm-hmm. you know, I thought Vanderbilt's pitching is great. And okay, that means they'll hold Ole Miss to 6 or 7 runs a game, but that might be too many based on the way Vanderbilt's offense had struggled out of the gate. And so I thought the second part of that is that, you know, even if the pitching does its job, is the way I was defining it going into the weekend, that might not be enough if Ole Miss can come in and pitch well. And they had, Ole Miss had shown some signs of maybe starting to figure some things out on the mound. You know, Jack Doherty had been solid. Xavier Rivas has now stacked a couple of good outings back to back. So, you know, maybe if you squint hard enough, maybe you could talk yourself into them figuring some things out. And then it turns out that both of those things weren't, you know, didn't come to pass. Right. I mean, the Vanderbilt pitching staff completely shut down Ole Miss, held them to 4 runs in 3 games, which is beyond insane. And then the offense put up all kinds of runs, you know, that the 12 runs being tying the most they'd scored in any weekend game. They've had some midweek games where they eclipsed that. But so I just ended up kind of being doubly wrong about the way I thought this weekend was going to go, where I thought, okay, you know, they might slow down Ole Miss, but I think Ole Miss is built to be able to win this series based on winning games. You know, instead of winning games 10-5 like they have, maybe they'll win games 6-4, right? But Vanderbilt flipped the script on them. I thought it was just really, really impressive stuff. I think the biggest individual story out of this is Hunter Owen. You know, we named him the SEC Extra Pitcher of the Week. Complete game shutout, 11 strikeouts against Ole Miss in that middle game. And not only was that just a great outing in any context, but within the context of the fact that one of the questions I had about Hunter Owen is, okay, he's really good for 4, 5, 6 innings, maybe even, but he had yet to really show us a game like this.
It was breakthrough. And
for sure. Yeah. So now you have to feel like, okay, if you can do this against this lineup, because by the way, this was a bad weekend for Ole Miss offensively. I actually don't have really any big picture worries about the lineup. I think they're fine. I think they got punched in the mouth a little bit, and I think that's going to happen in the SEC against top flight pitching, and that's what they saw. And so let's talk again if this happens 2 or 3 more times in the coming weeks. But for right now, I'm not overly worried about this Ole Miss lineup. This might have been an adjustment they just needed to make at some point. But yeah, I mean, Hunter Owen giving them someone who can come in behind Holton, and now they've got a real 1-2 there. And Devin Futrell was great in game 3 as well. So, but the Owen piece of it, I think, is just huge, having now a second guy who can turn in that kind of outing on a weekend.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of one of those deals where we saw 5 sweeps. You know, you mentioned being wrong on really both of these teams, and I think most of us were, right? Everyone who's trying to understand and prognosticate and make picks and all that fun stuff, it didn't go real well. So I think the interesting part I take from week 1, and this is the epitome of it in this series, is we really don't know what's going to happen, because on any given week, these teams are so similarly built that you're going to have weeks like this where it just goes off the rails. And I didn't see this coming. I didn't see that coming. I mean, think about it. You had 5 of the 7 series were sweeps. 3 was the most we had at any point last year. Mm-hmm. And of those, LSU and Florida were not one of the 5. I mean, that to me says it all of how unpredictable things are going to be, which, you know, from our standpoint is great because there's so many cool storylines and surprises and all this good stuff. But boy, it's going to be maddening for coaches trying to develop consistency, because every week is a gauntlet. It really is.
Yeah. And I mean, Ole Miss has Florida next. So that's, mm-hmm. that speaks to that. Vanderbilt goes on the road to Mississippi State. We'll obviously touch on Mississippi State a little bit later, but that Ole Miss Florida series has a chance to be a whole heck of a lot of fun. And speaking of things we didn't see coming, the next item on our list is that Missouri swept Tennessee, because of course they did. you know, they win the Friday opener. Weather, I don't even really want to say washed out, although I think it did like snow or rain or something. It was more just that it was really freaking cold in Columbia, Missouri. So they do a 2 7-inning games on Sunday as a doubleheader. Mizzou wins them all, and Mizzou just flat out outplayed Tennessee. This was not fluky. This was not Tennessee had a bad injury on the mound, and so their pitching got thrown off. This was not, you know, Mizzou had one game where they hit a bunch of bloopers, had 6 hits in an inning that led to 4 runs, and they just hung on for dear life to those 4 runs. Like, it wasn't any of those fluky things that happened. It was they got to Dolander, Burns, and Beam. The pitching held up. I mean, they held the Tennessee offense down basically the entire weekend. And by the end of it, Tennessee, and look, it's easy to look disinterested. I think sometimes it's easy to judge based on when a team is losing, they're not going to look happy, right? Like, nobody's going to have a smile on their face when they're losing. But they did look like a team that by the end of it just looked shell-shocked and kind of disinterested. And, you know, this is something that was a talking point last year with Tennessee, that they got punched in the mouth so rarely last year that when they finally did meet some resistance, they didn't necessarily punch back as well. And so they're going to have that opportunity now, because they got punched a lot earlier this season than they did last year. But my big takeaway here is that Mizzou just beat them. You know, Tennessee's more talented. I don't think anyone would make that counter argument. Tennessee's the more talented team, but Mizzou was better on this weekend.
I think another part of this is, you mentioned the weather, and it was brutally cold, and it was cold in a lot of places, you know, across the country this weekend. And we tried to play ball in it. And I think part of that is, while it is cold for both teams, there's a skill to being able to handle that adversity while you're going about your business and doing the things that are already challenging, right? You're already playing at a high level, and the other team's got good players and all that kind of stuff, right? But just understanding that, okay, it's 35 degrees and it's windy, and I really don't want to be out in this mess, but I've still got, you know, I've still got to lay off that 2-strike pitch when I'm thinking about how cold it is, you know, and those kind of, and I've still got to make the throw to first, and all of these kinds of things. It's just one more piece of adversity for a team to have to deal with. And we saw some teams that handled it really well this weekend. And then we saw some others that perhaps didn't and had a lot of self-inflicted problems. So it's not an excuse, but that is part of handling it, and part of the maturation of the team is not only handling the other team, but handling the conditions. Maybe it's, you know, later in the year, maybe it's 100 degrees and, you know, and it's high humidity and, you know, those kinds of things. And those present different kinds of problems. But I do think that was part of what we saw, that Missouri just handled the conditions a lot better. The other thing, and more on the field, is the 7-inning doubleheader certainly helped. But I don't think it affected the outcome of the series. Maybe in game 2, when Tennessee started to kind of get some things going late, but Missouri showed pitching depth. You know, I felt like when they went with is it Maltrude in relief on Friday? I mean, he was the projected Saturday starter. So it was kind of we're going to push the chips in and make sure we get this one. This one doesn't get away from us. And so then you're thinking, well, what's going to happen the rest of the way? Do you have enough pitching if you use, you know, 2 of your best bullets? And they did, man. They showed depth. And it wasn't just kind of fluky stuff too. I mean, they held Tennessee to 1 hit in the 3rd game of the series. You got to have some depth to do that. It wasn't just one guy shoving. So it was really a team pitching staff effort. And that offense has got some older guys that have been through it. There's a lot to like offensively. If they can continue to pitch to any semblance of what we saw this weekend, this team isn't going away. I mean, they're going to be right in the thick of it.
Yeah, I think they're certainly not going away. I think that's a good way to put it. Now, whether or not that's good enough to be a postseason team, we'll see. Mm-hmm. But I think it's fair to say this team isn't going away. At a bare minimum, that's what they're going to be. Quickly, one more thing on Tennessee. I do want to talk more Mizzou because I don't want to get overly wrapped up in the what happened with Tennessee. I want to give Missouri their flowers because, like I said, they outplayed them. But quickly on Tennessee, which of the two things do you think is a little more cause for concern? One is that all three of Tennessee starters got hit a little bit. Now, it's a little unfair to Drew Beam. The defense really let Tennessee down in the third game. I think all the runs he allowed were unearned, but he gave up three hits and walked three guys. And so it's not like he's totally innocent in that whole thing. But certainly Dolander and Burns got hit more than Beam did. So I didn't go back and look. I have to imagine that's the first time all three of them have really gotten kind of like worked like that in an entire weekend. So is that more of a cause for concern, or is it that the offense outside of, to your point, they made a little bit of a run, got, I think, a Zane Denton 2-run homer late in the middle game that kind of maybe got them back in the game, but ultimately didn't do a lot offensively. Which of those two things do you think is more of a concern as we move forward?
Yeah, of the two, I'm more worried about the offense. When you've got those premium arms like that and Frank Anderson to help with the pitching, I'm less concerned there. Although, obviously, it was shocking. No one saw that coming. Not maybe one of them gets roughed up, but not all three. But offensively, I am, you know, they have to replace a lot of production. And in Tennessee, they're a club right now. They're going to get everyone's best shot. I mean, you're not going to sleepwalk when the Vols come into town. So it's going to be, you know, the seventh game of the World Series when they walk in. So it's part of, you know, LSU's going to see that too. You know, it's part of being so successful. Everyone wants to make a name for themselves and kind of humble you. And that's, you know, that's what we're going to see. And they've got to deal with it because it's not going away.
No doubt. I mean, that's a great point. This team, even if they aren't, let's say they don't live up to the preseason number two billing, ultimately, they're still, because of the success they've had, because of the, mm-hmm. you know, the fact that people don't like the way they carry themselves sometimes, that they're always, no team is going to kind of go into that weekend and just kind of shrug their shoulders at it. Right. So that's a good point. I'm with you, by the way, on being a little more worried about the offense. I don't know if I said this on our podcast or a radio hit I did, or one of the other podcasts with Kendall Aaron and Runes. I forget, but the bottom part of the lineup, and this is a nitpick, but the bottom part of the lineup just isn't as good as it was last year. You know, last year you had guys like Evan Russell who hit 14 home runs, hitting eight, you know, or whatever. And Cortland Lawson was a really good offensive player, took a bunch of walks, like really steady guy. And he was the bottom of the order. And this year they just really, it feels like they haven't totally settled on their 7, 8, 9 guys or positionally settled on those guys that are going to be in those spots. And so again, you love the meat of the order. It's great, but there's just not quite as much depth there, it feels like. And you know, so that is something to watch. I'm with you that the pitchers, those guys are just so, so good. I have a really hard time believing that this is like a harbinger of things to come on the mound. I just think Mizzou probably had a good game plan. You know, Mizzou came out aggressive and they had success, and kudos to them. And I think what's becoming clear to me is that Mizzou has the guys on the top end to really compete. On the mound, it's Chandler Murphy, it's Rorik Maltrude, it's Tony Newbeck, and more on him in just a second. It's Zach Franklin. You know, Austin Tresser was great in that Sunday game. You mentioned giving up one hit. He was the guy who started it, and they needed him, and there he was. And so, and then on offense, it's Luke Mann, it's Trevor Austin, it's Hank Zeisler. The question is the depth for them. You know, they're not as deep as a lot of the rest of the SEC, and certainly as the top teams that we talk about. Mm-hmm. So they're going to have to stay healthy. They're going to have to stay in form. And that's a little bit of a concern because they do have some injury stuff going on. I mentioned Tony Newbeck. He came off the mound abruptly in the second game of the doubleheader Sunday, showed no real outward sign of injury. You know, it wasn't like, oh, he, and I was listening to the game. I was not watching it. So, but the way the play-by-play guy was telling it was that, you know, he didn't come off the mound and hold something or limp off or anything like that. It's just the trainer and the pitching coach came out there, and after a very brief conversation, he just started walking off the mound. And so no real hard details on that yet, but so you hope he's all right there. But if they lose him for any period of time, that's a big blow. You know, Ian Losey has come back now, but he missed some time. Javon Pimentel hasn't pitched since the FIU series. He's a transfer from Arizona, was going to be a big part of their plans. Ross Lovich, an outfielder, has had a nagging hamstring thing, and he pulled it again in the first game of the doubleheader yesterday, rounding first base. So who knows how much time he'll miss there. Pulled hamstrings can be a tricky thing and just stay with you forever, it seems like. So they, you know, they've had some, you know, guys nicked up, and so they're going to have to get healthy and stay in form, because I think their top end guys could lead this team to being a postseason team. But if they have to tap into some of that depth, I'm not as confident in their ability to recreate the success of this weekend moving forward.
Yeah. I mean, that's so much of being successful and really at the top of the sport is just injury luck. Right. And a lot of that is, you know, will you struggle? And if that inevitable injury that teams typically have at some point during the year, is it at a position that you can afford it? All right. Do you have someone who can step in and give you a similar output? And, you know, that's always the problem for some of these programs at the lower end of the pecking order. And hopefully for Newbeck, this is not a bad deal here.
One name I missed, of course, was Sam Horn, the guy who's a two-sport guy, quarterback on the football team. And I mean, maybe in terms of just arm talent, the best arm on the pitching staff. He got hurt earlier. I think was it in the Minute Maid tournament, maybe, that his injury happened?
It was down at FIU.
Okay, yeah. So, you know, that he's on the mend, but isn't due back for a little while still. So he's another one that's on the shelf. But regardless, you know, Tennessee's got Texas A&M at home. We'll talk about this in a minute. Maybe Texas A&M starting to figure things out? Question mark. We'll see. And then Missouri has South Carolina on the road. That's a fascinating series all of a sudden. I will be there in Columbia, South Carolina for that series. Looking forward to seeing two teams I've not seen with my own eyes this year. Looking forward to that. So more to learn about these teams, but man, a heck of a weekend for Mizzou. And look, Mizzou's a team that has to win. I was going to say toss-up series. This wasn't even a toss-up series, I think, in the eyes of everyone, basically. But in order to be a postseason team, you have to flip some series. And this is one. Now, there's a lot of work still to go, but they're going to have to win series like this to be a postseason team. And this is certainly a good start.
Yep.
All right, let's move on to the series I was at this past weekend. That was in Gainesville, Florida, and Alabama. Fun series, hard-fought series. I thought learned a lot about both teams, frankly. You know, Florida wins the opener behind an outstanding performance from Brandon Sproat. Mm-hmm. They split a doubleheader on Friday. The series was over before some of the West Coast series really started because of whether they had to play a doubleheader Friday. So it happened pretty quick. A lot of baseball in a 24-hour period, basically. Three games in essentially 27 hours, I guess. Mm-hmm. And Florida looked the part. I mean, it wasn't perfect for Florida, but you understand why they are now considered to be rightfully one of the small handful of top national title contenders. And it started with Sproat's outing. I mean, we know he's a big time arm, but the perception of him has always been that it's a big time arm, but the stuff doesn't play the way you'd think it would based on him being a guy who can touch 100 and what have you. But this was the best he's been in a Florida uniform. And it's not just the numbers. It's also that, you know, his fastball had life, unlike I've really ever seen it. The changeup was plus, you know, he was locating the breaking ball. He typically has been known as a guy that doesn't have great feel to spin, but that was there. This looked like a different Brandon Sproat, and, you know, he'll have to continue to show this, but man, I mean, a guy who really bet on himself to come back to Florida. And if this continues to be who he is moving forward, it looks like that was a prudent decision.
Yeah. I mean, he really did take a step. And that's going to be the thing. I mean, it'll be interesting. They go to Oxford this weekend, and if he can put back to back, and maybe not a one hit shutout, but that kind of performance against that team in that environment, then oh my goodness, that changes the math on a Florida team that the math was already pretty good for. Yeah, it's that was a good series opener for them. And but then after that, you know, in the doubleheader, I did feel like Florida really missed Langford. Just having that lineup depth, that other guy, you know, certainly I think Cags missed him. Just having that extra bat on the, although Curlin and Rivera and Rypel and those guys really, they played well. Just having that other feared bat that you got, you must worry about. And then pitching wise, I mean, the start, you know, Waldrop and Cags were okay. They were not as good as perhaps they've been in other weekends, although, you know, Alabama can swing a little bit. So that had something to do with it. I do think if the bullpen kind of, you know, steps forward, like if it's Neely or, you know, one of the other guys can be that closer, that stopper that they can bring in that crucial moment, I think that's the missing piece for me. I'm not particularly worried about their midweek issues, because what's going to happen is that staff's going to get stretched out and they're going to use fewer guys. But what I am worried about is the end of games. And I do think that assuming that gets, you know, that's really the gap. If they can fill that gap, then this is a team that can win it all.
No doubt. The other thing about the midweek games is they were playing two midweek games a week the first few weeks, and that will be lessened as time goes on, if not completely gone. I haven't looked at their full schedule yet, but so that's a factor there as well. I thought that you talk about the bullpen, and I think the game one of the doubleheader, the middle game of the series, which was back and forth all game, really fun game. Florida ends up just basically getting, you know, literally the last at bat, but really getting the last punch in and landing a knockout blow to walk it off. That win, I think, happened because of what Sproat did, because it kept the Florida bullpen from getting overexposed. So if Sproat goes six, even if it's six good innings, well, you've got to find three innings somehow, and maybe you would have had to go to Neely or Slater or whoever. So then maybe on Friday in game one in particular, they would have had to reach for guys that weren't in the previous night's game, more than likely. And that game maybe goes a different route, and then you never know what happens in that finale. So I think the series could have really, or really did shift on that Sproat start in a number of ways. On the Bama side of things, I think you saw in equal measure in this series why you should still be optimistic about Alabama this year, why this could still be a team that could host a regional. I still don't think that's out of the question for this team. I think this team is very good. But also why they're not quite there with the upper crust of the SEC yet. Like, they're just not quite on Florida's level yet, or LSU, Vanderbilt, pick your whoever, you know.
Arkansas.
Mm-hmm. Arkansas, certainly. They, speaking of that middle game, they just didn't, they went to Riley Quick, who's been very good this year and will continue to be very good, I think. You know, blowing saves is just going to happen in the SEC, but he maybe got a little stretched out too much, maybe a little overexposed there. They don't, much like you mentioned with Florida, Alabama still, at least going into the weekend, didn't feel like it had that guy who they could come in and be a hammer, you know, and just kind of like shut the door. And maybe Cade Wood's that guy, because he was like great.
Last game, didn't he?
Up to, you know, I think it was seven strikeouts, was it?
Base seven batters, struck them all out.
Yeah, exactly. Not up to 97 with the fastball. Like, it was real stuff. So maybe he's the answer now, but they didn't know that coming into the weekend, probably. Right. So that was missing. The offense looked, I love that lineup 1 through 9. Again, I still think it's true, unless you want to say it's Drew Williamson or Andrew Pinckney, although Pinckney has tailed off a little bit since his really hot start. It's still an offense without like a star, I guess Colby Shelton maybe, but you know, he's still swinging and missing a decent amount. So I say all that to say, they still don't have a Tommy White or Dylan Cruz or a White Langford or whoever, but like 1 through 9, they're just really dangerous offensively. They've got every guy that.
Yeah. And it's really like 1 through 12, right? Cause they're playing a whole lot of different combinations and feel good about them. I do echo what you said about the pitching staff, and it was really odd because if they did not have the, if this was a Friday to Sunday game instead of a Thursday game, I think you would have seen Luke Hallman. And he's been in midweek. He's pitched really well. He's 4-0, and I mean, he hadn't given up a run in his last two starts. Didn't give up a hit in one of them. I mean, he's a guy who's going to pitch on the weekend in some role. He could start this weekend against Kentucky. And I think he would have probably started one of those three had they not played on Thursday. But instead, I saw their midweek with South Alabama, and Brad Bohannon just kind of mentioned that, you know, I really didn't want to lose this road game at South Alabama. And with us playing Thursday night, I needed some innings. And he was the answer. And because of that, he went 7, right? And I do believe that, you know, coming up, he's going to have a big role. And, I mean, he's 4-0. Look at his stats. I mean, they're incredible. Now, he hasn't faced SEC hitters, but you pitch like that and you're going to get – you will get a chance to. So, I think that's part of what they're trying to figure out. And then Garrett McMillan, he was last year's Friday guy. He's going to return any week now. So, you know, and he'll have to ramp back up. But so it's a, they have pieces. Unlike past years of, you know, they kind of struggled after those first few guys, and you look down the bench and you just didn't really see anybody that you wanted to go to. And now that problem's not there, at least to this point. They look to have an abundance of options. It's just trying to find that right mixture.
No doubt. Florida, as we mentioned, has Ole Miss coming up. That'll be an interesting series. Also an interesting series, Alabama has Kentucky coming up this weekend. That will be extremely interesting, and that's a good segue because Kentucky swept Mississippi State over the weekend at home. Another cold series where maybe that played a role in the outcome here. But for Kentucky now, just quickly, that's 14 wins in a row. They're 18-2 overall. Before we get into the specifics of the series, I mean, sweeping the series is important. One, because as you and I talked about, I don't know if it was on the podcast or if it was, yeah, it was definitely on the podcast, where we said, hey, this is both teams go into this series thinking, hey, we can get this series. Mm-hmm. And not only did Kentucky get it, they swept it. And so if you're starting to do the math in your head, and I don't want to take anything off the table for Kentucky, like if they win enough games, hey, man, maybe they host. Who knows? You know, shout out to the 2006 Kentucky team that just like kind of came out of nowhere and was like, holy cow, this team is really good. You know, in 2017 to some degree. Regardless, even short of that, though, just getting back into the postseason would be huge for Kentucky. And you start off 3-0, the math gets a lot easier. Yeah. Now, to be very clear, not easy to win enough SEC games, but easier. So if you're trying to get to 14 regular season wins, let's just even say 15 to really put yourself in good position. So, you know, now you need to go just 12-15 in your last 27. Again, not easy, but okay. If you're going to be a postseason team, you're going to have to do that. So the math just is so much easier once you start off this strong.
Yeah, I mean, talking about the math, one would suspect, based on how many non-conference road games they play, that the RPI will favor them. So, so that's an advantage. Whether you might have to win one fewer game in the conference, or maybe it's two. You know, if your RPI is good enough. So all of those things are exciting. But on the field, that's just a team that puts pressure on you. They take a lot of pitches. It's tough at bats. They're aggressive on the bases. They don't make a lot of mistakes. And contrast that, if you make mistakes, as their opponent did this weekend, they're in prime position to take advantage of it and score. You know, they scored was it 4 runs without the ball leaving the infield? I mean, right. Think about that for a minute. So this is the kind of team that if you are going to kick the ball around and you're going to struggle, they just love this. I mean, this is right up our alley. We did that to you, right? And they're going to feed off of it. And I really like that kind of team because they put pressure on you, kind of in your face. And hey, you want to have a knife fight in the ditch? All right, come on. That's our game. So I think that's the kind of mentality that maybe if you don't have the elite talent. Not that they aren't talented, but you don't have the LSU Tennessee kind of talent. If you can get that sort of blue collar mentality, we're not taking any guff off nobody. That's a huge benefit to kind of even that playing field.
Yeah, make sure you have your tetanus shot if you're going to get in a knife fight with Kentucky in a ditch. You know, got to be careful.
It's been done.
Yeah. I mean, the lineup is relentless. I mean, it's a great way you described it, because it is just like 1 through 9 relentless lineup. And they've had some guys really emerge. I mean, Hunter Gillum has been a leader there. I think the guy who might make things go is Jackson Gray. Maybe he's getting like a little overlooked a little bit, but he's a center fielder who has some strength, and so he's got some pop and he can run. He leads a team in stolen bases. You know, he had one really good year at Western Kentucky and one really bad year at Western Kentucky, and it looks like they're getting more of the former than the latter, which is good news for UK. But he looks like a guy who's maybe kind of making them go that's been a little bit overlooked. I'd still like to see this Kentucky lineup in a situation where they have to really chase a game, because they're not the most physical lineup. Mm-hmm. And so if they get down 3 or 4 runs, I'd kind of be interested to see how they deal with that, because they've been playing from in front quite a bit, which is a great problem to have. That's not a dig. Play from in front. That's the best way to play baseball, is from in front. So, you know, that they've had that going for them, but I would like to see when they're in that situation, and it will happen in SEC play, how do they deal with that? Are they able to make that kind of comeback? Because they are right now an offense that, yes, they're going to put pressure on you, but they're also going to need to string together, you know, to have a big rally, 5, 6, 7 batters on base in an inning. And that can be tough to do against the type of pitching in the SEC that can really miss bats.
Yeah, and what happens when the opponent doesn't give you a lot of free bases and errors?
Right.
Right. Right. So, you know, that's all, you know, to be seen. And we'll get a pretty good idea. They go to Alabama this weekend. I think that's a pretty even series, at least on paper. I guess they kind of all are. But it's a fascinating one to me, just to kind of see where both teams are.
Yeah, it's a great point. Alabama's not going to give them that. Like, certainly it's not going to be that. So there's a lot. Just quickly on the Kentucky pitching staff. Still just a 2.88 team ERA. Logan Martin got skipped again. So not sure exactly what the deal is there. Supposedly it's a pretty minor injury. I'll have a Kentucky-centric podcast up later this week, so I will certainly ask about him on that. But so he gets skipped. Otherwise, the pitching staff has been everything they could have asked for. I mean, Darren Williams moves into the weekend rotation when Logan Martin is out, and he's really picked up where they left off. Ryan Hagenow has been great out of the bullpen. They've got real depth there. So on that side of the ball, it feels like things have really taken off. I've been super impressed with that unit as well as the offense, obviously. So they're just getting it done in all phases. And the opposite of that, though, is Mississippi State, which, look, I made sure that we talked about Kentucky first and really gave them their due, because they deserve it. And because otherwise it's really easy to just kind of gawk at Mississippi State's weekend like a car crash you pass on the highway or something. But they're just not a good team right now, full stop. I don't know. They're not doing things well. You know, the pitching continues to be a struggle. They're on version like 3.0 of their weekend rotation at this point. So they've tried a lot of guys. Gerangelo got hit for the first time this past weekend. So maybe that's a blip. Maybe it's that the book is out on him a little bit better now. Could be either, could be both. They're still giving away too many free bases. The defense is still not playing well. The catching position has been a real struggle. You know, Luke Hancock, in addition to injuries, has struggled throwing runners out. And so they've kind of thrown Ross Highfill into the fire, and he's struggled defensively. They have 13 pass balls already this season. Last year, they had 3 all year. And offensively, they're good. I mean, they're walking more than they strike out offensively. They take plenty of free. If you see Mississippi State play, you're going to see a lot of walks, I guess, is what I'm saying. But the offense has been really good. But as you and I have talked before, there are a lot of really good offenses in the SEC. And I don't think their offense is so good that they can just plan on bludgeoning teams. Maybe there are offenses that could do that in the SEC. Arkansas might be one of them, and they might have to at some points. This offense is good. I don't know if it's that good. And that to me is kind of troublesome, because the big picture thing, and I wrote this in our Extra Bases blog yesterday, that if Mississippi State had easy answers, we would have seen them by now because they've tried a lot of stuff. They've moved pieces in and out. They've tried different roles, and it's just not worked. They have stretches where they play well, but then they always fall back into this. And so if there were fixes, I think we would have seen them. And to me, that's kind of indicative of where this team is. I mean, because of what Ole Miss did last year, I think we're all a little bit like skittish to make a lot of assumptions about teams early in SEC play, but they're going to have to be so markedly better than they've been to be in good position in the SEC. And it's just hard to imagine that from where they are now.
Yeah. A lot to unpack there.
Can you tell I've thought about it?
Yeah. I saw them Wednesday night in Biloxi and they played really well. They kicked the ball around. They threw strikes. I mean, it was probably one of their crisper games that they played. And I left feeling pretty good about them. I left the ballpark thinking that this team's going to go to Lexington and they're going to win the series because I just felt like they had turned the corner. And then I don't know if it was the cold weather. I don't know if this is just who they are or what, but they just made so many self-inflicted injuries there. I mean, just it was almost like a comedy of errors. You can't win baseball games playing that way, no matter how talented you are. And you know, it's I know there's frustration. I know that there's you mentioned just trying different combinations, and you try different people. You try people in different places. You try them in different roles, and and that's one of the things that Chris Lamonis, their head coach, mentioned to me after the game. Is like, I said, what have you learned about your team, in this pre-conference schedule? And he said, well, we learned what we're good at, and we learned what our weaknesses are, and we have to have a plan to deal with that. And that those weaknesses, sometimes you can make the best plans in the world, and if they're not executed or the players are not in the position to take advantage of their opportunities, then this kind of thing happens. And it's bad, guys. I mean, it's really, at this point, it's such a challenging deal. And then Vandy comes in, who really plays the same way Kentucky just played. I mean, they're a similar offensive style, going to put a lot of pressure on you. But you know what? Everyone with the ESPN Plus subscription is going to play that way too now, because now the book's out on you if it wasn't already, right? So you're going to see this until you have an answer for it. And, that's where Mississippi State is right now. They've got to throw more strikes. They've got to stop throwing the ball down the left field line, and they've got to come up with some hits from in on base. And if they do those things, they're talented enough, they can play with anybody. If they don't, they're going to finish last.
Yeah, it's not a talent problem. I mean, did they have enough talent to win the SEC? Like, maybe not. But do they have the talent to be a solid postseason team? Absolutely. Like, that's,
they can beat anybody in the country.
Yeah. Yep. So that'll be fascinating. They like you mentioned, they play Vanderbilt because when it rains, it pours, I guess. Dealing with Enrique Bradfield Jr. when you can't throw anybody out on the bases is not an ideal situation. We will see how that plays out. Our last three series, I don't want to say they weren't notable. There's plenty of stuff we're going to talk about, but these next three feel kind of a little more, well, that's not even fair. Let's just get into it. I was going to say a little more cut and dried, but maybe not. I think there's a lot to talk about here too. LSU wins its series against Texas A&M. And first of all, what's new? Paul Skeens is great. Kendall Rogers was there, our colleague, in that game for that game. And he had a quote from Jim Schlossnagel that said, he's playing in the wrong league. He should be playing in the National League or the American League, which is, absolutely.
Great line.
And I think
it's also true.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. It was, it should have been a hint at how good he was. The fact that he was as good as he was at Air Force when he was having to, go to school at Air Force and fly planes in his spare time, like the whole idea that now he gets to, he still, got class, but he's mostly a baseball player at this point. But we should have had hints at how good he could be just based on how pressed for time he was at Air Force, and he was still dominant. But regardless, so he gets it done in his first SEC start. I think there was some intrigue about, well, okay, he's done it against these, you know, these non-conference teams that weren't ever going to touch him. Now, what does he do against SEC foes? And we obviously saw on the A&M side, A&M's starting pitching, I felt like, took a step back this weekend, and that had been kind of keeping them afloat a little bit whenever the offense was struggling. But I felt like look, LSU's offense is going to make a lot of teams' starting pitchers, quote unquote, struggle this year. So I don't want to be definitive about this, but that to me is kind of where this series started in terms of the unraveling for A&M. I mean, sure, okay, you don't get much off Skeens, but on the flip side of that was that there wasn't a lot of resistance from the A&M pitching staff, at least on the starting side.
Yeah. So I think the key for A&M is they've got to figure out what they're going to do on the mound and the roles. You know, that with the bullpen in the final game, what was it, like 5 scoreless innings or something like that? I mean, really kept them in it because they fell behind early, just like, and we thought, oh, well, LSU's rolling to a sweep. And then I forget the names here, but Johnson closed. And who was the guy who came in? Been the midweek guy. I'm blanking on his name.
Lamkin.
Yeah, Lamkin. He pitched great too, and they were both really solid in that, in coming down the pen, and just kind of kept A&M in it till the offense could figure it out, and because of that, you know, they were able to steal a game, and in the weekend of, you know, everyone's getting swept, A&M didn't, and they had the toughest draw. So, you know, that's one of those things that you may look back, you know, in May and go, wow, that one game might matter, you know, matter from a hosting decision or, you know, whatever. But I guess the other – with LSU, offense is so good that – and with Skeens, he was – I kept – expecting that A&M, because they're such a tough team to pitch for, they take a lot of pitches and fight with you and foul off 2 strikes and all that kind of stuff that just frustrates people, that this might be a gotcha point. Life on the road, first SEC start, big crowd, cold weather, all of that, and no, it was the same. He's just totally focused on the task at hand. He will not, you know, be pushed off center. And he was great again. And maybe, you know, no one's as consistent as he's been, but he's going to try to prove us wrong there because that's his mission. And I think the other part of that is the starting rotation behind Skeens. They didn't go real deep. And I don't know if it's, you know, if it's cause for concern because they've got plenty of arms behind those guys. But you certainly want more than, you know, 3 1/3 out of your 2 and 3 starters. So that, to me, if there's a concern, you kind of have to manufacture it with this team, but that's it. And what's going to happen, because while A&M is, that, you know, they're tough to pitch to, there are more productive offenses that they're going to face starting this week when Arkansas visits. So that's kind of a cool thing to watch next weekend.
Yeah, going to be a fun series, Arkansas and LSU, probably the series of definitely the series of the weekend in the SEC this coming weekend. A couple of other quick things. One is I wonder if the series feels, or the Sunday win for A&M feels like it could be like a little bit of a turning point. And maybe I'm just kind of trying to grasp at something here, but they could have rolled over in that game. You alluded to it. They were down, but they mount a comeback against the LSU bullpen, you know, push the go-ahead runs across, I think, on Christian Little, and then end up winning that game. And so not only is that just a good news from the standpoint of you just never want to start off SEC play getting swept, even though so many teams did this weekend, but also just a kind of, okay, we can play with this team. Like, we're not that far off, all that. And you combine that with the fact that they are getting a little healthier. Trevor Warner pinch hit in the game. Brett Minnick is closer than not to coming back. So that's all good news. So, you know, maybe playing a little better combined with getting healthier, maybe that does put them in position to be on an upward trajectory after a pretty uneven start to the season. And the one last thing I have is that I will just let you know that Dylan Cruz is still batting over 500, which is just nuts. Anyway, he knows what he's doing. He seems to have an idea up there. So we'll see how long that lasts. My goodness. Okay, South Carolina sweeps Georgia. And I think this, like, I like, you know, when I saw Georgia, I liked Georgia. I was kind of surprised at the last two games, how easy South Carolina made it. Tough game on to lose the opener. And I guess this was a Saturday doubleheader, Sunday one game. Mm-hmm. The opening game, you know, it took a late comeback from South Carolina. They got a couple runs late on Matthew Hoskins, but the last two games weren't particularly competitive. And that kind of surprised me, especially with the way Georgia had been swinging it. But I think the big headline here with South Carolina is that Sanders, Hall, Mahoney rotation, if it's healthy and pitching well, they're just going to be so incredibly tough to beat. And the fact that Will Sanders is the most famous of all of them, and right now he has the worst, and I'm using air quotes because the numbers aren't bad, but the worst quote unquote numbers of any of them, I think is actually probably pretty good news, because if that guy is the third best starter you have, statistically speaking, you're in a really, really good place.
No doubt. And, you know, we expected them to be able to pitch heading into the year. What I have been pleasantly surprised at, and this was reinforced this weekend, is just how physical their lineup is. I mean, not just home runs, but they get up there and it's a dangerous lineup to pitch to, and they're just bludgeoning teams. And Liam Sullivan had been pretty good, right? And they handled him pretty well. I think the thing that's going to be interesting for me with South Carolina is if they don't hit home runs, can they manufacture? But you know, that hasn't been a problem to this point. They've been hitting the ball all over the park, and there's depth. It's not just one guy doing it. With some teams, you have the 3, 4, 5 guys and no one else, and they're hitting through the lineup. So I like their club right now, and they have depth in the bullpen. We rave about their starters, but that relief corps has been really good too. So a lot to like. It's a fascinating series for them with Missouri coming in. I mean, that's a really cool storylines based off last weekend. Some teams have to be feeling pretty good about themselves.
Yeah, I'm going to enjoy the heck out of that series. I'm really fascinated to see how that ends up playing out. I think there's still a relatively reasonable question to be asked about South Carolina's offense once it faces the best pitching staffs in the SEC. Although you could ask a similar question about so many offenses in the SEC, right? I mean, the Ole Miss offense just got shut down, right? And that's an elite offense on paper. And Georgia's pitching is not that. But, you know, Jaden Woods pitched fairly well, but they got to him a little bit. But they were the first team to get to Liam Sullivan this year. And they really exposed Georgia in the finale. And Georgia continues to have a Sunday problem. They switched out starting pitcher. They went with Charlie Goldstein. And I think the idea was just to throw a bunch of arms, which even when Nolan Crisp was starting on Sunday, that was felt like the idea. But they just were relentless against Georgia on Sunday and never for a second really let them feel like they were in the game. So, you know, Georgia's got Auburn on the road, and that might be, we'll get to Auburn in a second. That might be a cure for what ails them a little bit. And ails is a interesting word there just because of Auburn's injury issues, but came away really impressed with South Carolina. Obviously it was a little bit disconcerting, maybe too strong, but gives you a little bit of pause that Georgia's offense didn't really come to play really in general, but especially the last two games. South Carolina's pitching is really good though, so we'll just have to kind of wait and see on that. Final series, Arkansas sweeps Auburn, and really this, you know, it's just impossible to evaluate Auburn for what they are right now. You know, they're still missing Joseph Gonzalez. There was a thought that maybe he comes back last weekend. That doesn't happen. They're still missing Bobby Pierce. They're still missing Cooper McMurray. Cole Foster came back, so there's that, but they're still just missing really important pieces. This team showed us early this season that when they're at full strength, they're pretty doggone good, and I thought maybe that I had just grossly underrated them, and maybe I did at full strength, but they just haven't been that for a while now. And Auburn really, I'm sorry, Arkansas really kind of exposed that and mm-hmm. you know, just really took care of business for the entirety of the weekend. Arkansas just controlled things.
Yeah. I've just kind of had this notion that Auburn has been getting by pitching wise on smoke and mirrors, you know, while they're trying to figure out roles and got young guys that may not be quite ready for the role they're in, but they're the best available and maybe they learn on the job and who knows, they can flourish as the year goes on. But Joseph Gonzalez might be the most important person to any team right now because of what he would have meant as a veteran presence to give them innings on the weekend. And right now they just don't have enough guys. Offensively, they didn't hit much. They had 6 hits on Friday and Saturday and only got 3 Sunday. Some of that is the injuries and some of it was Arkansas and some of it is just kind of baseball, right? You're not going to, when you feel like you have to win by outscoring people, sometimes you put too much pressure on yourself or whatever happens and that doesn't work. So I think, you know, Auburn's still a team that, that you're not, counting out by any means, but they need to get healthy and they need to have some success primarily on the mound just to kind of relax and, hey, this is who we are and this is our roles and let's get this thing stabilized.
On the flip side, you know, Arkansas is a team that has injury issues of its own and they just kind of continue to plow through them more or less. I mean, Hunter Holland is now the de facto ace of the staff, but he's been really good. And, you know, I probably don't need to remind at least our Arkansas listeners that that's a guy who maybe wasn't even going to be in the rotation to start the year if it weren't for Jackson Wiggins' injury. You know, Hagan Smith's in the bullpen and we kind of raise eyebrows at that. And yet he comes in out of the bullpen and is a good fit for that role. And I, you know, recall that he did that a little bit in the postseason last year, towards the end of the year, came out of the bullpen and was good in that role. So it seems just like a good fit for him for whatever reason. And they roll Cody Adcock into the rotation and in that third game, and he just answers the bell. So they kind of just continue to, Arkansas does, to kind of figure it out. And look, they will face offenses better than Auburn in the SEC. I feel like we're a broken record in saying this kind of thing, but they will face better offenses. But the thing about it is that their offense obviously is one of the elite offenses in the country. And so on days when their pitching doesn't get it done, their offense is probably going to be there for them. So they're in an enviable position where they've problem solved on the fly on the mound and it's worked so far. And the offense has been there for them, but it's not like a situation where we've seen with Ole Miss at some points this season already, where, you know, the offense really has to kind of bail them out a little bit. Arkansas has really just kind of gotten it done all around.
Yeah. Well, you know, when Van Horn did this, you know, moving Smith to the pen, you know, obviously we're wondering what in the world's going on here. And, you know, my first thought was, well, he doesn't like his pen without Tiger and he's trying to do something for the short term. But heck, after watching him this weekend, I wouldn't mess with it. I roll with what you got. You could use, you know, Smith on Friday and Sunday and let Tiger go, you know, go multiple innings on Saturday if you needed to, you know, once he returns. So, and then you got the best of both worlds, assuming that the, you know, you continue to get the kind of starts that you got this past weekend. So Arkansas is in great shape. Offensively, they're really tough to pitch to. They're aggressive, kind of like we talked about with Kentucky and Vandy. They're going to make you work for it. That's a well-coached, well-oiled machine offensively, and they're going to present problems. Can't wait, you know, to see how they handle, you know, the super team in Baton Rouge. That's a really talented roster. But Arkansas's got some dudes too, so that's going to be a lot of fun.
The Arkansas heads Baton Rouge to play LSU. Have we mentioned that series is going to be a lot of fun? And then, you know, Auburn has Georgia in a series, as we alluded to just a minute ago, is going to be a series that both teams are looking at and saying, hey, let's get some wins here. Let's get back on the horse a little bit. And one team will probably feel pretty good about that by the end of the weekend. And one team is really going to come out fighting it, frankly. Yeah. So that will be interesting in its own way, really. So a jam-packed first weekend of SEC play. Next weekend promises to be to something close to it in terms of intrigue. And I have a feeling we're just going to continually keep saying that as the season rolls on. And of course, Mark and I will be here at the end of every weekend to recap the weekend that was on the Highway to Hoover podcast. And that'll do it for this episode of the Highway to Hoover podcast presented by Brock's Gap Brewing Company in Hoover, Alabama. Thanks to Mark. Thanks to you for listening. And we'll talk to y'all soon.